You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm also your host, Brad Jackson.
And we're here again. This time, we're, you know, probably going to be dealing with a little bit of a bug infection. So if you have any Raid, break it out, because we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of Starship Troopers. It's time to go on a bug hunt. And of course, you need to bring a cigar for bug hunting. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week, we've got something from Romeo and Julieta. This is the Romeo 505.
Yep, the Nicaragua.
This is kind of a unique cigar too, because this thing supports a lot of Habano.
Yeah, it's like Habano on Habano on Habano.
Yep. So you know, Habano Jalapa wrapper with a Habano Jalapa binder with Habano Esteli filler, Habano Condega, as
more
well
Habana.
As Habano. So I'm going to go ahead and say that this is probably very much on the full side of the spectrum. No medium about it.
Yeah, which is unusual for Romeo and Juliet to do something this, like, you know, spicy and powerful. And the name 505 comes from, it's also the area code for Nicaragua, since it has so much Nicaraguan tobacco in it, you know. And also 505 is kind of a code for, you know, enjoying the finer things in life, apparently, or at least that's what their website says. I'm rocking the 706 and the 404. I don't know nothing about that 505 life.
Yeah, I've still got that 678. Got on that bandwagon.
But also, if you find yourself stranded on Planet P and you got to go on a bug hunt, you should always call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. You know, comes in a little tiny pouch so you can hide it in your ammo belt when you're going off to hunt bugs. You know, and you don't have to worry about the can rattling when you're trying to sneak up on people. You know, kick the can, you know, grab yourself a little pack of Strike Force. And now,
also electrified fence safe.
Yes. And now those sweet 750 milliliter bottles where you can just pump a couple shots in whatever you're drinking, you now can get it in all the flavors. Original, grape, orange, lemon, make America grape again. That is like my favorite. It tastes great in some like grape Powerade.
That's like grape inception.
Yeah. So we will be, and also we're going to have some more of our Dragon Con interview series. So we'll have a blow in smoke with Jay Little coming up talking about game design. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back.
Well, hold on. I'm going to screw you up just like that.
Spot a bug?
Well, it's not that I spotted a bug, but, you know, here as we're, you know, getting into the cigar in the first third, one of the things that jumps out at me that, you know, I was anticipating spice, but there's a complexity to the cigar that I was not anticipating. When we did the Olajero cigar,
yeah,
that had no complexity, no, I mean, it was just, it's a daring smoke, but it's not an enjoyable smoke, where this is actually very, very good. And it's not like so spice intensive that, you know, I was almost thinking this is going to be a challenge cigar, but this is very much a sit down, relax, and a very enjoying smoke.
Yeah, when you think power, and when that's usually advertised as like a powerful, most of the time it's a kick in the mouth. I mean, it's all strength, no subtext, where this is very well blended. It's surprisingly, you know, enjoyable smoke so far.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. With that, we'll be right back. Come on, you apes.
Would you like to know more? They landed on Clandathu after quite a crazy cops are dead. They called for help from fleas. Diz was impaled as they left. Another major snap pool. She whimpered right before her death. At least I got to have you.
And we are back. Time to go way back to 1997.
Gosh, it's... Think about it, man. So long ago. It doesn't seem like it should be that long ago, but it is.
No. Yeah.
Like in a time when the internet was in its infancy.
Oh. Yeah, and it, the whole futurist, like, our, you know, of course, as you heard in the intro, talking about Starship Troopers, 1997 Starship Troopers, directed by Paul Verhoeven and written by Edward Neumeier. Maybe that's how you pronounce that. But yeah, the weird like cut scenes within the movie where it's like
recruitment super, videos.
Yeah, super propaganda stuff, but then they're always in it with like, do you want to know more? Click here. I mean, and that's like something now, yeah, if you watch this movie now, you think that's commonplace to be watching a video and have like a link pop up. But back in the day, that was like, wow, this is really futuristic. We can, like, you know, delve deeper into this show.
Yeah, that's truly cutting edge. Like, I wonder, like, if they could do, like, a remastering or something, and, you know, with smart TVs and everything else.
Make the links actually active. That would be pretty cool. Maybe on the Blu-ray. If they release a 20th anniversary Blu-ray, you can make the links actually active.
Yeah, I mean, I know on, you know, back when watching DVDs and stuff on a PC was a thing, you know, a lot of your menus and stuff like that were very much interactive, where, you know, you could be browsing the web and stuff like that based on the content of the film. So, I don't know. That would be a ploy for me. I'm like, what kind of propaganda can I bestow upon myself?
Yeah, I mean, when this movie came out, it wasn't a huge success. I mean, made for 105, made like 121 million, which, you know, it at least turned a profit. But it, you know, it developed that cult following. This is one of those that, like, in theaters, it may have not have done huge bank, you know, but it did it did enough that, like, in the video market, this is one that, you know, you watch every couple of years or see on TV occasionally.
Well, I mean,
it's
that's
just
the
one
thing.
It's weird, like, enough that it's entertaining.
Go and look at the reviews, and, you know, once again, I mean, you see this so many times whenever a film, you know, is adapted from a novel, and people are like, well, it's not like the book, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. For me personally, like, if I'm going to watch a movie that's based on a, you know, off of a book or whatever, I'm trying to not think about the book, you know, in sequence, I guess. Like, I try to go into it as, all right, you know, this is where they get an idea and a premise, but I don't expect things to be exactly the same. You know, mostly,
yeah, I think pretty much the book version of Starship Troopers, where they basically just use the name because it was kind of apparently the original script, I think it was called, you know, Bug Hunt or something like that, and they just,
which,
you know,
is very much
the name Starship Troopers because it was sounded cooler.
Call in the exterminators. Like, I'm kind of, you know, like, I would think, you know, you're hunting things like the bugs. Like, why not be the exterminators or something? Like, Death Squad or whatever. Although, I got to, you know, give props. Like, you get some pretty sweet death tattoos, you know, when you join up.
Yes, the...
Welcome to the grinder.
Oh, yeah, the course, the you know, military graduation, everyone's got to get matching tattoos in a sweet futuristic laser tattoo shop that only takes, like, you know, a couple minutes to put some sweet ink on you. I mean, it's the future right there.
Yes. robotic tattoos, that's a scary thing. Like, you're really putting a lot of faith in the program.
Oh, yeah. You want to see bad robotic tattoos? Watch that new Kingsman movie. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I trust a robot. I definitely don't, you know, think robots are going to take over. I don't trust a robot tattoo guy.
Yeah.
It might, like, somebody would hack it and it would, like, do something inappropriate.
Yeah, like, you know, talking about, you know, some of the comparison and reviews that people made. So I guess, you know, we're going to get into the 90210 in outer space.
Wow, now that I think about it, yeah. Because
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, drama. I mean, you know, you join the, you know, Federation, you know, because, well, my girlfriend's going to, you know, go into basically the Air Force equivalent. I'll go infantry, you know, and I'm really not in it, but, you know, I want to be able to relate to her and, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, and then what happens? And, you know,
of course, she dumps you for an officer.
Yes. Dick.
I mean, they even portrayed the futuristic Dear John letter sequence.
Fucking Jody.
But yeah, especially go back to, like, even the start of the film, it does have a 90210 feel because you've got Johnny Rico, who is like the captain of the whatever space football team they have, played by Casper Van Dien, and then Denise Richards playing his girlfriend Carbon Abanez, who wants to be a, because basically in this future, if you want to be a citizen, you have to serve in the military. You know, so you don't get any kind of voting rights or anything else unless you have military service.
Sometimes I feel like we should take notes.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, his best friend, Dizzy Flores, who played by Dina Myers, who is like in love with Rico, but he doesn't see it because he's in love with Carmen. And then there's Patrick Muldoon, who's Xander, who is the hot upperclassman that's, you know, trying to steal Rico's girl. Yeah, like before, like the bugs show up, very like high school drama show.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel like it's very fitting. I mean, you know, think back to, you know, high school in 18, 19, you got people that are, you know, all right, I'm going to continue on to college, or, you know what, I'm going to pursue the military, you know, and, you know, some people are just, you know, they're born and bred, and hey, the military and the service is exactly what I want to do. And other people, they get into it because, well, either that's what my friends are doing, or, you know what, I haven't really made the best choices in life, so if they'll take me, you know, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't know what I want to be, so there's not a college degree I want to go to. Let me go, you know, gain some experience and some skills, and then maybe that way I'll find some direction. And
I mean, I thought that was really kind of cool, you know, from Rico's, you know, character standpoint was, you know, the parents, you know, no, you're going to do this with your life. And no, the hell I'm not.
Yeah, because he was like really, you know, a rich kid.
Well off, yeah.
I mean, he didn't have to go into to military service and all that. But, you know, he was motivated, you know, chasing his girlfriend, but also, you know, his
love is a crazy thing.
Well, then also his instructor, played by, was it?
Yeah, his professor that, you know, is basically a, you know, former Marine equivalent, you know, and I thought that whole dynamic was really cool.
Yeah, because, Michael Ironsides, who's a freaking great character. He's in everything.
And but what a more fitting last name, Ironsides.
Yeah, who plays Raschek, his, you know, and he's, you know, missing an arm and everything. He's a, you know, former soldier, but he's like one of those guys that, like, he, like, in this movie, like, propaganda is a big thing, you know, where they're, you know, the little cutscenes that tells you what's going on in the movie, they're, it's always skewed very, reminds me a lot of, like, the old World War II propaganda films and stuff, where it's like, you do your part, you know, and all, you know, all those, like, you know, do stuff for the war effort and everything else. But, you know, him, it's more like, you know, here's why you should be a citizen and all that, you know, but not, he was, you know, kind of led by example and not like, you know,
yeah,
super,
I mean, that's
propaganda-ish.
The thing. He didn't, you know, I mean, he was very much a doer, not a, hey, this is the, you know, philosophy that you need to follow or anything. It's like, you know, if you got the bronze, and step up, make something of yourself.
But then once you see him later in the film, because, you know, spoiler alert, he comes back. Because, you know,
I'm not dead yet.
Rico goes off to basic, and, you know, his girlfriend dumps him. He ends up getting one of his recruits killed in a training accident and is really wanting to give up. But then these alien bugs hit the Earth with a meteor, which is, yeah, bugs are kind of low tech. That's a pretty badass, like, you know, space weapon. But anyway, it wipes out his whole town. So he's like, you know, wants
what
to.
What was that? Buenos Aires?
Yeah, Buenos Aires. Yeah. So he, you know, talks his way back in. And but anyway, so later on in the film, you see apparently, you know, his Razchek had rejoined too. Somehow he survived the the bombing. But, you know, now he's like a total badass. He's like, I got one rule in my unit. Everyone fights, nobody quits. If you don't fight, I'll kill you myself.
I mean, which is sort of appropriate. I mean.
And he got a badass metal hand.
Yes. Oh. But, yeah, I mean, you know, one of the characters that I always, you know, thought that I related to, for some reason, was Ace. Like,
yes.
You know, I mean, for some reason, like, I'm like, that was me in high school.
Yeah, because when he gets to basic, he meets Ace, who's played by Jake, Boosie. Yeah, it's Gary Busey's son. And the dude looks like a skinny twin of Gary Busey. But he is the, like, loudmouth character who is just like, I'm going to be the squad leader. I'm, like, the best guy. And, you know, kind of starts off as, like, the bully, but then Rico, like, stands up and he's like, hey, get your ass in the back of the line, no cutting the lines, quit picking on people. And he's like, you got some balls. We're going to be friends. And, like, I think I've had that experience yes. in high school where it's like, you know, I remember, like, one guy who was, like, you know, kind of the bully. And, like, I was, like, the one dude that told him to, like, fuck off. And he's like, I like you. We're going to be friends. And it's like, because, like, I didn't take no shit from anybody. So it's like, you know, I ended up making friends with all the bullies. So they're like, we're not going to fuck with him.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's kind of funny, too, that, you know, like, I don't know. I guess it's just a different dynamic between, you know, when you and I were growing up versus, you know, people nowadays. Because, like, I couldn't function, you know, as a teenager today, I don't think. Like, hell, I'd be, like, disbarred and, you know, freaking locked up in a hole somewhere.
You told somebody to fuck off? Yeah. Oh, my God. You made me cry.
PC police would have me, like, you know, freaking, I don't know. I'd be hung.
Oh, but, yeah, to back it up, too, right, when they go to recruiting and they're finding out, like, they take basically their futuristic version of, I guess, the ASFAB test, where it's like, you know, find out what your aptitude is and see where you're going to go. And of course, Carmen gets fleet, which is, you know, their Air Force. She wants to fly the spaceships. And someone we haven't talked about yet, this another important thing for this movie, it reintroduced Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes,
because before then it was like he had done Doogie Howser and some like guest spots, and we hadn't heard from him in like years. And then after this movie, he blew up. I mean, you had Harold and Kumar, you know, How I Met Your Mother. Like, the dude has, like, gone on to have a huge career. But, you know, he had a, going from a child star to an adult star, there was, like, a blank period that you're like, where's Neil? But then this was like, fuck, Neil's back.
Yes.
Playing Carl Jenkins, who's, because apparently in the future, like, some people are psychic or have some kind of psychic aptitude. So, you know, he's got some psychic tendencies. So he ends up going into, like, military intelligence. And then Rico's is kind of like the dumb jock. So he's like, I scored infantry. And the guy who's like, you know, signing their paper. And it's like, oh, good job, son. That's infantry made me the man I am today. And he's got like no legs and a robot hand. Yes. And it's just kind of like that. Oh, what have I done?
But I mean, you know, like, I guess that's really what made this like such a great military sci-fi is, I mean, you know, I can remember meeting with recruiters and stuff like that, and you would very much run into, you know, similar scenarios. Or you had, you know, great-grandfathers or whoever that had served, and, you know, they're, you know, missing limbs or whatever, and it's like, it kind of makes you think twice. Like, maybe that 30 should be a 60 or 70.
Yeah. Oh. But, yeah, then the like I said, there's the once you get to the pre-war part of the movie, the futuristic basic. I love those sequences. It's freaking hysterical because it's, I mean, Clancy Brown as Sergeant Zim, who is their drill chief drill, and you can almost see him trying to channel some Arlie Ermey when he's like chewing everybody out, especially like when he's, you know, addressing the troops on the first day and like. you know, giving everybody nicknames and stuff. And then one guy's like, he's like, all right, who here thinks they can knock me down? And then they get the one big dumb farm boy that you have in every, you know, military movie. He's like, I reckon I can, sir. Step on up. And he like freaking snaps his arm.
He's like, go to medic.
Medic. He's like, you know, and then whatever, Dizzy shows up because she's, yeah, trying to stalk, still in love with Rico. So she asks for a transfer. And he's like, what makes you think you can join my squad? And she's like, all right, fuck it. Takes off her shirt. Like, I'm going to fight. You know, and she
gives him holds her own for a minute. Yeah.
And then he just chokes her out and is like, medic.
But I mean, what a great way to earn some respect, though. I mean, you know, and that was kind of the other thing, too. Like, the whole co-ed, you know, aspect of Super Troopers, I think.
Starship Troopers.
Or Starship Troopers. I'm going to do that probably for the duration.
You've been doing it all
yes.
week.
Like, I'm like.
But yes, the famous co-ed shower scene in the, in that, which when I was reading some of the background on it, apparently the cast was like, all right, we'll do the naked scene, but only if the director also gets naked. So, fuck it, why not? So apparently the director was in his directing chair, butt naked, filming the scene.
I mean, if you're going to ask your actors and actresses, you know, don't put them in a position you yourself are uncomfortable with, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, I mean, one of my favorite sequences from that that basic training sequence is when they're all practicing throwing knives. And you know, Ace is like, I don't get it, Sarge. Like, because he's bad at it. He's like, yes. He's like, he keeps bouncing off.
We got guns. Why do we need knives?
He's like, yeah, he's like, you know, why do we need knives? We got nukes. I mean, you shoot a nuke down a bug hole, get a lot of dead bugs or whatever, you know. And he's like, all right, Trooper, put your hand on that wall. He's like, okay. And then he throws his knife and sticks it right in his hand. And he's like, if you disable the enemy's hand, he cannot push a button. Medic! Yes.
Trial by fire.
Yeah.
That would be some shit my dumbass would have got myself into. Like, you got guns and shit. What?
But Zim, too, is like, he's an interesting character. And I always like Clancy Brown. He brings some, like, cool stuff to the role because, you know, they have a training set. And it was like, you know, they had a laser gun training thing. And I was like, oh, my God, that's like futuristic airsoft. That's badass. That makes someone want to go play some paintball or some airsoft or whatever where it's like, you know, if you get shot, it just shocks the piss out of you. Yeah. But, you know, then later on they're doing a live fire training exercise. And, you know, one of his troopers is having trouble. At this point, you know, Rico's made squad leader. And, you know, one of the guys is having a helmet malfunction. So he tells him to take his helmet off in the middle of a live fire exercise. And the guy accidentally gets shot in the head. So, you know, Rico gets sentenced to, like, lashing, you know, and Zim, like, gives him something to bite on. He's like, here, man, this will help. You know, he's like, as hard-ass as he is, he's like, yeah, this is going to suck. You know, bite down on this and, like, man up. It'll, you know, he tried. And then, like, you know.
Well, I mean, I like that whole aspect because, you know, he hands it and he's like, take this. It helps. I know.
You know? He's so like, I've been with you. Yes. He's got a past. But then when the, you know, because even after he takes his punishment, instead of like saying, all right, I fucked up, took my punishment, I'll continue on, he decides to quit. But then the attack on Buenos Aires happens and he tries to like resend his, you know, in the whatever base commander's like, too late. You've already signed your paperwork saying that you're out. And he's like, but, you know, I lived in Barry Center. Everyone I know is dead. And Sergeant Zim's like pulls out his paper and he's like, is this your signature on this form? He's like, yes, sir. And he's like, bullshit. Doesn't look like it to me. And like rips it up, you know? And like, so he still had that kind of like heart and understanding, even though he was like, you know, the hard ass military guy.
Yeah. I mean, it was those dynamics that I don't know. I mean, it.
And I love where he, before that conversation happens, when he's talking to the general or the whoever is running the camp, he's like, sir, I want combat. And, you know, he's pissed off by this too. And he's like, no, you're a training sergeant now. Like, if you want to go, the only way you're going to see combat is if you bust yourself down to private.
And later on, we see him in combat.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, Sergeant Zim. He's like, actually, it's private now. But he's like, okay, he's like, yeah, I'll bust myself down if I get to go shoot some bugs. Yeah.
Which, I mean, the whole bug aspect was really kind of cool that, you know, in this film is, you know, you see him at first and you're like, oh, they're hard to kill. But then you figure out that, oh, wait, those are more like just the scouts. There's the whole brain bug aspect that...
Yeah, that was what...
The vagina anus-looking thing that would just...
Yeah, yeah, because like at first you just see these... They call them arachnids, which was kind of a weird name for me because they don't look spider-like. They look some kind of insecticide, very insect-like. But yeah, they called them arachnids. But yeah, the it looked kind of reminded me of like a weird, like those pincher bugs you see.
Yes.
Like the, it looked like those beetles type thing. But there's, you know, different ones. It's, there's like, you know, basically an insect equivalent of our military. The regular foot soldier arachnids, and then you have the big brain bugs that are the officers or generals. But then they have...
Like the scorpions that, you know, are like the mortar team.
Yeah, they have like these big beetle things that actually shoot their... plasma into the air, like is like their anti-aircraft. And then they, there's even like the Bug Air Force, which is like these weird flying prey and menace looking bastards.
It's like, fuck. We'll take them by land, air, or sea.
Where's the giant bug zapper when you need it?
Well, that was kind of the thing, you know. I'm sitting here watching, you know, I can remember the first time, and it's like, you know, they're starting to work on some electronics, and they're like, get this fence up. And I'm like, it's going to be a big bug zapper. And it was a big bug zapper, and I was really happy.
Yeah, in some of the later movies, they have the electric fences, which pretty much just looks like giant bug zappers. But yeah, and like in this first movie, too, and it's like the initial confrontation with the enemy, you know, they're all like, they're freaking insects. You know, there's no cohesion in them. And they get their ass kicked on that first attempt.
Well, you know, the kind of the thing that was weird for me in this first film was it's all futuristic and everything, yet it seemed like we're still using standard ammunition. Like, you know, it's...
Those rifles were pretty cool. It was like a whoever actually made them, it's like a Mini 14 and a shotgun inside this, like, you know, housing and stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's like 12-gauge and, like, you know, 5.56 rounds.
But, yeah, like I was, you know, later on you see them actually, you know, using more like a laser ammo. And I was like, that's kind of what I was anticipating for the first film. But, you know, because it seemed to be, the weapons weren't very effective. It took a lot of shots to take down even the smallest of bugs.
And there was just, like, an overwhelming horde of them, too. It's like, it's, but, yeah, the... Was it the one thing about it in, like, you know, the first movie? Like I said, there's so much leading up to the first battle because it's at this point been following a rookie unit that has had no combat experience, and they're all like, "Yeah, we're gonna kill them all," and then, you know, they hit that first bit of real world experience and get their ass kicked, and after that, you know, by the end of the films, you know, they've gained experience and become veteran soldiers. So it's like, it's, you know, they're very much kids at the start of the movie.
Yes.
And then they're adults by the end of the movie.
They got their 1,000-yard stare.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, after that first encounter where they all get fucked up, they end up, you know, their unit's all broken up except for Ace and Dizzy and Rico, but they end up teaming up with the Roughnecks.
You know, I gotta say that, you know, I like that whole dynamic, you know, the progression of Rico and Dizzy, like, or Desi. Like, you know, the whole scene where, you know, Rico and Desi hook up and, you know, the lieutenant walks by and he's like, ship out in 10. And he's like, who's that with you? Oh, it's Desi. Oh, make it 20. I was like,
yeah, because, yes. Yeah, they end up with Rychek and his team. They call the Roughnecks, and yeah, they go off on a mission. But yeah, he's so much more of a badass. He's like, you know, my one rule: everybody fights, nobody quits, or I'll kill you myself. And then, you know, one of their guys gets picked up by a bug and looks like he's getting butt rammed by a spear, and he shoots him with a sniper rifle, and he's like, I expect y'all to do that for me. You know, he's like, you know, he's tough, but he's interesting because after their first, like, big encounter where they clear out and, you know, Rico shows some badassery himself. You know, he, like, you know, takes out a whole tank bug using, like, you know, his old spaceball tactics. So he ends up making him squad leader or corporal, I think. And he's, you know, they're camping down for the night, and he's like, I expect the best, so I provide the best. And he's like, beer's in this box, games and stuff's in this box. And he's in the, like, so they have like a big ass party, and you know, Dizzy's trying to hit on Rico again. He finally comes up to him, he's like, you asked for my advice once, would you take some more now? And he's like, sure thing, sir. And he's like, never pass up a good thing. And he's like, that sounds like a good idea, sir. And finally hooks up with Dizzy.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, once again, I guess that's getting back to the whole 90210 aspect of things. But, you know, that was kind of one of those feel-good moments.
Who then immediately gets killed on their next mission, along with the lieutenant. So, yeah, Rico, kind of remind me of, like, the old whatever Audie Murphy movie where he starts off as, like, private and he's, like, a general by the end of it because he just keeps getting battlefield promotions.
Yes.
Because he's, yeah, Rico, you know, now they've run into... to Neil Patrick Harris again, who's now a colonel, and he promotes Rico to lieutenant and gives him the roughnecks, and now it's Rico's roughnecks. And he pretty much, when they get all the new recruits and stuff in, he gives them the same speech that Rycheck had gave him. He's like, welcome to the roughnecks, and then Rico's roughnecks. yeah, but they find out that there is a brain bug and send them in after the brain bug so they can study it. And then the whole,
which,
like,
is kind of weird, like the way they go about capturing it with the big nets. Like, I feel like that thing would just decimate. Like, I mean, you see how powerful these bugs are and everything, and yet at the end of it, it's like, yeah, we're just going to rely on some leather straps and, you know, some netting, and it'll be okay. Like, it's like, no, like, take some notes from Jurassic Park. Put that thing in, like, an electrified metal box or something. Like,
oh, yeah. But then I like the fleet gets shot down, and, of course, Carmen crashes on the planet. But, you know, Neil being, or, you know, Carl being the psyche that he is, you know, communicates, and since he can't give any kind of official order, just gives him the idea to, like, hey, you should go save Carmen, and he does. He's like, sure. It's like, no, that's classified. I can't tell you if I read your mind or not. but yeah, then he's like, you know, and he gives his speech too, where he's like, you know, when people look back on this day, you know, they may not realize that it's, you know, at the end of the day, we captured a brain bug, and it wasn't the mighty fleet or even the mobile infantry. It was a sergeant named Zim who said, and that's when they meet Zim again. He's like, yeah, I busted myself down to private so I can come kick some ass.
yes. The first film. I don't know. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, fuck whatever the critics, you know, said to start with or whatever.
It's very, like, love-hate. Yeah, it's like, you either love it or hate it, but it's one of those that's like, it definitely has developed a big cult following. And, you know, this year at Dragon Con, they kind of had a reunion. Dina Meyer's there. Casper Van Dien was there. And it was, and I think even, whatever, Muldoon was there too. So, yeah, it was like, this movie, it's definitely, you know, still a lot of love for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right. So I guess we segue into a movie that I've got no love for.
Yes, because with most things, they can't leave it well enough alone. So, you know, Starship Troopers actually inspired two live-action sequels that were straight to TV or straight to video. all right, let's just go with the second one. Starship Troopers 2, Hero of the Federation, directed by...
And I'm looking at the clock, and like I said, absolutely no more than 27 seconds in this film.
Yeah, came out in 2004, directed by Phil Tippett, but also still written by the original writer. And yeah, this is like absolutely nothing like Starship Troopers.
Which, you know, I mean, all right, so...
Other than there's bugs.
Yeah, I mean, the bugs are about the only constant that this film brought. I mean, it opens up in the middle of a battlefield, and, like, it's weird. You see the propaganda videos still, and they're all nice and clear and crisp. The rest of the film is overlaid, and this freaking grainy looks worse than any VHS movie I've ever seen. And I'm like, this came out in 2004? Like,
that's because it
And I guess they had zero budget, because there is so much green screen that I can't really say anything positive outside of maybe one or two lines that were relatively funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was so bad. I mean, that's one reason, like, the whole movie is dark because they...
For effects. So
it looked like they were using bad CGI, and bad CGI can be hidden if it's dark enough. You don't want to do any daylight stuff when you're using, like... You know, that's the thing. But the first movie, of course, there's CGI in it, but it looks good, and a lot of the... Especially, like, the close-up stuff of the bugs is, like, all practical effects and puppets and stuff. And, you know, there's that sense of size and scale and weight with there's not when you're using a horde of CGI bugs.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I guess the bug aspect in this movie was kind of cool because this is more of a parasitic, you know, style bug. So, you know, I mean...
Yeah, this movie, it comes in on a unit on some embattled planet where they, you know, there's no rescue, so they're all trying to take off. And, you know, the general that's with them, like, you know, he's, like, gonna keep a... the kind of back guard their back door and send off the rest because they're like, well, there's an abandoned outpost, you know, up the way we might be able to get to and hunker down until they can get us some kind of rescue. But this one was very much more of a horror movie than it was like a traditional, you know, sci-fi military film. I mean, because they've discovered some kind of new bug, which is almost like a weird, very spiderish, but they can go inside of a host and take control of their body. And it's a very, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers-esque storyline.
Yeah. And, I mean, it just... Like, you know, the first film, you can relate to characters, and there's a character dynamic that really plays into the film, and there really wasn't with, you know, the second movie. Like, there wasn't a single, you know... character that I'm, you know, rooting for or anything else. Like, I couldn't get involved, you know, with this movie the way I could the first one.
Yeah, the general, like, the bug's whole plan is they're gonna sneak in and turn everyone with these parasites, and eventually they want to infect the general so he can go back into high command and infect the rest of the high command.
Basically classified secrets and figure out a way to...
And also he can, you know, add his parasites to the rest of the high command and just basically make everybody surrender.
One of us!
Played by Ed Lauder as General Jack Shepard. And, you know, he shows up, you know, after the squad gets to this outpost, you know, he shows up with, you know, two other guys and some unconscious girl, Private Charlie Soda, who's like, I just found them out there, but they got separated from their group too. Like, the rest of the squad's dead. It's just me and them, but they're all a little bit wonky. Especially their tech sergeant's a little bit nuts. They're like, he's been out here a long time, but turns out they're all meatbags.
And the girl just sleeping through all the battle and everything else. Like, you've been asleep for 5 days. Like,
with no injuries either. Yeah. They're like, oh no, she's just very tired. Yeah, the doctor's a little bit a little bit weird on that, and the one thing too is like the sergeant of this crew is played by Brenda Strong, who played the captain of the starship that Carmen was on. So it's like no one's even going to notice.
Didn't
let's just recycle this
by a big metal door.
But yeah, the effects are so low. Like, the rifles, like, at least in the first movie, they're firing blanks, so you're getting like actual muzzle blasts. But in this one, they didn't even take the time to use CGI muzzle blast. They basically put like a strobe light in the barrels of these guns. Like, oh no, it's laser rifles. But there's not even like a laser shooting out. It's just the ends of them flash. It's basically like a strobe light in the end of a gun.
It's infrared, man.
Oh yeah, that effect annoyed me.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean,
it almost looked like a bad, like, Skinamax, like, sci-fi, like, you know, porno.
Well, you know, instead of premiering on, you know, Skinamax, this import on Encore Action. So, I mean, you know, you're not far from it.
Yeah, because it was a bunch of no-name actors, bad CGI. It looked like it could have been a porno. And then there's, of course, you know, all Starship Troopers have the, someone has to get naked. And, you know, the, when Charlie wakes up, she goes around seducing all everybody so she can infect them with the, with the spider babies. Oh.
Which almost, you know, reminded me very much of Species. You know, that's.
Yeah. And, you know, when they find this abandoned base, they find chained up a captain, Captain Dax, who supposedly killed the base commander. And then he's like, they're like, why'd you kill him? He's like, he had bugs in his head. And they all think he's just gone crazy until, you know, they slowly start to expect, like, people's personalities are changing, like, overnight. There's something.
Well, and you know, I guess that was probably one cool dynamic, is once Dax comes into the picture, then, you know, your people with more of the, you know, psychic abilities start coming into play. And, you know, once Dax, what's the girl's name? She's, you know, basically just
Sahara.
Sahara, yeah, and, you know, forces her to, you know, hey, tell the officer, you know, exactly what you told me. And then the officer's like, yeah, I've got to come clean. I've noticed, you know, things are off as well. And, you know, at that point, like, at first I was like, this dude's an asshole and just needs to get wasted. But after that point, it's like, ah.
Yeah, because he's kind of like one of those, like, stereotypical worthless lieutenants you see in a lot of, like, you know, action movies that's, you know, knows nothing, but he's in, like, command.
That whole, you know, fight where, you know, he's at the bar with the farmers or whatever.
No, that's the next movie.
Or, yeah, okay. Yeah,
but, yeah, he's kind of like, oh, I'm going to, like, have all y'all hung and stuff. And he's just like he's one that gets half the squad killed. And but then, you know, once they tell him what's really going on, because he's psychic too, and, you know, Sahara's kind of, you know,
she's
was psychic but lost it.
Yeah.
You know, she had some psychic, and apparently she got knocked up, so that can bring back psychic power. He's like, all right, yeah, I believe you. I'm going to go tell the general. But once he shows up, it's too late. The general's been bugged, and he gets killed, and they blame Dax, so they think he's
murdered another officer. You know, the whole fact when, you know, the girl's trying to seduce the general, and he's like, wow, you have a lot of energy. Come with me. And it's like, do 100 push-ups. Drop down and give me 100. You know?
Yeah, because Dax don't give a shit.
Make it 200.
Yeah. She tries to seduce him first. That doesn't work. So then she finally goes straight for the general. But yeah, I do like the weird tech sergeant they found, that he's trying to fix the base and fix the radio thing because he's trying to get the bug agenda gone. Played by J.P. Manaus. He's kind of, his bug body is not holding up well. He's been in there too long. So he starts falling apart and is like very like zombie-like. And at one point they find him, and he's almost just like a rotting corpse, but he's still alive. And the other bug-infested guy goes, takes him to like the barracks where there's a couple soldiers in there, and he's like, opens the door, and he's standing there with this like half-rotten corpse, and the corpse is like, hi, guys. And then they like rip off his head and pull out the like mother bug and throw it in there and shut the door. And when they step on it, all the little, you know, baby spiders run over. Anyone who's ever stepped on a pregnant spider knows that horror moment, like, fuck, they're everywhere now.
It's like, there's millions of babies.
Yeah, and I did like the sergeant, too, because when they're going through this base looking for supplies, she finds a bag of cigars in the freezer, and is smoking cigars through the rest of the movie. I'm like, all right, that's a badass lady right there.
All right, so there was, like, 4 highlights to this film so far.
I mean, it's, if it's on late at night, I would not seek it out, but if it happens to be on TV, it might be worth watching.
I'm a one and done on this film. One time was enough.
And then 2008, Starship Troopers 3 Marauder, directed by Edward Neumeier, who has written all the previous films. So finally he's like, all right, I'm going to step up and I'm going to direct.
I think it's like, all right, second film was a shit show. We need some sort of redeeming quality.
Because he's written all 3 films, and all 3 are very different.
Yes.
So, I don't know if it was like studios fucking with him or what, but yeah, because the second, yeah, the third one,
still
low budget, but watchable. It almost feels like a Starship Troopers movie.
I feel like the
movie.
Third one should have been the second one.
Yeah, because
the second one should not exist.
Yeah, not only do they actually bring back, Casper Van Dien is Colonel Rico now, who's like a base commander. Yeah, they bring back the, it's part of the plot, the original brain bug that they captured on P. And like I said, at least has, there's some connective
it's
tissue
familiar, yes.
to the original movie.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I don't know about you, but anytime something's direct to DVD at this time, it's always a bit iffy.
Yeah. Like I said, it's the budget's still a little bit low on this one, but it's, you know, at least, you know, felt a little bit more like the original. And it was the thing that was kind of weird is we're, like I said, they've always had the big propaganda, you know, military propaganda aspect of it. This one had a more of a religious propaganda element to it. It's weird. It was a very weird overtones.
Kind of unique in this film. And there's different religions. Like, you got people that, you know, like, worship the bugs, you know, and want to find peace. And then you got other people that are just, you know, your standard kind of, you know, Christians that, you know, and it's like the opposing gods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was so weird because there was, you know, there was the current Sky Marshal, Anoke, who is also a singer, apparently, and very charismatic, very, you know, almost like a cult-like leader aspect as time goes on. He shows up to inspect Rico's base, and his whatever chief of staff is with him, a general who actually used to be one of Rico's troopers, and you know he's very like full on drank the Kool-Aid, where he's like, you know, it's the Federation or nothing. Where Rico has actually been out there in the field dealing with the civilian population, who it's not very popular because like he's kind of, his base is on a farm planet, and he's like, you know, they need us, but they don't like us.
Yep.
And, you know, at this point, it's like any kind of, like,
which,
talking...
Which, I mean, you know, very much felt, you know, at this time, you know, we had the wars going on in the Middle East, and, you know, it's like, you know, for the time, definitely related to the emotion, I think.
Yeah. But in this reality, any kind of sedition or, you know, protesting of the government was punishable by execution. And, you know, he takes his old buddy out to a bar, and they end up getting into a fight with a bunch of farmers. And this guy's like, yeah, all right, execute him. And yeah, you know, Rico tries to step in, like, dude, they're just farmers. They're just, you know, pissed off and stuff like that. You know, it's, and so he ends up, like, you know, having Rico arrested and gonna have him executed for
insubordination. Which, that whole fight, you know, so basically, you know, one of the farmers steps up and, you know, Rico intervenes, and then, you know, another guy steps up, and the officer's like, no, I'll handle myself. And, you know, when he's like, that's, you know, article blah, 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 and, you know, he gets pummeled through a table or something. All right, now you're in violation of, you know, whatever this code is. And, you know, finally it's like, all right, that's an executable offense, and tries to execute the dude. Like...
Yeah, because they're like, yeah.
I like how he was trying to use the whole procedural thing, you know, as his defense as he's getting his ass kicked.
Yeah, and this one also has his love interest, who is the Sky Marshal's personal pilot, Captain Lola Black, played by Jolene Blaylock. Used to be on a little show called Enterprise. But yeah, it's
some space experience.
But yeah, they find out that after this whole incident, they go sort of headed back to the fleet, and they get shot down on this planet M, which turns out that, you know, the Sky Marshal had been personally interrogating the brain bug for years, but the brain bug was really interrogating him and convinced him to join, like, apparently, like, the bugs have a god who is, like, the brain of all brains. And, you know, apparently he's the one that cuts off the bug zapper and gets, you know, Rico's base overrun, kind of as a sacrifice to him to prove, like, you know, yeah, because he's like, you know, convincing him to join their side. He's like, well, I got to sacrifice all these people to my new god so he will accept me, because he's all about, you know, I'm going to go join with him and create peace between our two worlds. Yeah. But he's
we'll
being
know everything
basically,
about them. They'll know everything about us, and we can exist in harmony.
Yeah, and it's, you know, but it's kind of funny because there's. Because at this time too, like, religion's not is really looked down upon in this future, and one of the people they get stranded with is basically a flight attendant, and she's like praying the whole time, and he's like, yes, yes, you should always, you know, starts talking about God and praying, some of that, and so she thinks he's a Christian as well. And then they finally make it to the destination of where they're going so he can join the brain bug. He's like, yes, it's our Lord and Savior, whatever bug name. And she's like, wait a minute.
That's the wrong God.
Yeah. He's like, God has many names. I haven't heard that one. And immediately wants to kill him because he doesn't worship the same God, which is kind of, you know,
says about something. Right. Yeah. That whole aspect was very, very different. Not what I was anticipating.
Yeah, and they, you know, call for a rescue, and their transmission is blocked by the current, like, leader of the men. And, you know, the former general, you know, thinks that this is some kind of, like, coup where she's like, oh, I'm going to let him die so I can take over as the new Sky Marshal. And it is kind of that, but then she's like, shows him the evidence that, like, no, I'm not just doing this to further my own career, even though that's what it looks like. He's been turned. He's no longer, you know. But unfortunately, you know, there's a secret hidden base that only a few people know to, and the pilot has the coordinates. So if the bugs get her, they're going to be able to wipe out the entire fleet. So he has to kind of go off the books and save everybody. So he, you know, saves Rico from execution and sends him on a secret rescue mission with the new Marauders, which is a giant mobile suit. So I'm like, very Gundam-esque or
well, I was almost thinking MechWarrior.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking.
I was like, holy shit, you know, they always have the MechWarrior games and stuff at Dragon Con. It's like, can we get one of these, like a Starship Trooper version?
Yeah. Because like, he's like, so
another mechoids were, you know, looking for bugs.
Oh, yeah. But then it's kind of funny because, you know, he's like, you know, I saved you so you can go rescue Lola and the Sky Marshal. And he's like, well, all right, how, you know, what division am I getting to this area? Oh, we can't give you a whole division. We're giving you like 7 troopers. He's like, what? Yeah, 7 including you. Dude, you should just let me hang. You know what I mean? I'm still going to die. And then he shows him like the suits and he's like, this might work. But then, of course, Starship Troopers, someone's got to get naked. So they all have to get butt naked and get scanned first before they're
which is weird, given the suits. They're in flight suits inside the, you know, mech. So it's like,
which would have been funny if they got out of the mechs and they're still butt naked. People are like, it's a rescue. Why are you naked?
Don't ask, don't tell. But yeah.
That was like that weird gay joke too in this one too that was just kind of, really? This is a thing?
Yeah.
Because like, they're like, do you want to join? Like, one of the propaganda of it is like, do you want to join the, because like, the first one was very much like all the propaganda, join the mobile infantry. Where this one, it was like more about join the fleet. And it's like, do you have, you know, high intelligence, quick reflexes? Do you have a high HED score? And then there's like this random dude with a bunch of other naked dudes in the shower. And they're like, they say guys can't give good HED, but that's not true. And I'm like, that's a little weird.
You know, I guess, you know, hey, whatever, you know,
it's the future, yeah.
We're not going to discriminate, you know, whatever. Just don't have religion.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was, and then, you know, of course, you know, the captain, you know, is fighting it through the whole way, making fun of the religious people. And then she's like, you know, once they're completely screwed, they meet the giant god bug who is this huge thing. And he's like, yes, I'm here to join you and find peace. And he's like, yeah, we're going to find peace because I'm going to get all your secrets and wipe out humanity. That's how we're going to find peace.
Which is kind of weird, like, you know, how the, you know, creature communicates, because he's got, like, you know, all of these other squadrons, like, on, like, these tentacles communicating, you know, through them. And I'm like, it's very, like, Puppet Master-ish.
Yeah, because it reminds me of the scenes from Independence Day when the aliens, you know, primarily communicate telepathically, and he's holding up the scientist, using him as a puppet to communicate to the other people. And that was very much like, you know, because he had been communicating with him through the brain bug, so he really didn't have to say anything out loud, but he's kind of just like doing it for effect. So because it's been hard to film a mental conversation, but using the zombie puppets to you know, clue the audience in on what's going on. But yeah, then after he gets eat, and then you know it's just the captain and the stewardess, and they actually start. You know, she's like, "There's nothing else we can do. We should pray." And she looks up and she sees this halo around her head, and she's like, "Holy shit, this is all real!" And just starts praying with her. But the halo is actually like the drop jets from the Marauders coming in to save him. And even after they sew and blow up all kind of stuff, and like Rico walks up to him, when the back hatch of the robot opens up, it almost looks like metal, like angel wings.
Yes.
It was just very like just strange.
Which I don't know. I mean, the whole aspect of officer and her at the end, where they're like, all right, we should take a vacation and get married. It's like, yeah, but I gotta tell you, I've found something. Religion.
She's like, I found religion and I've got it bad. And I'm like, it's like she's telling him she's got the clap. It's so weird. And even like the whatever Admiral Fid, who eventually becomes the Sky Marshal, when she's seeing the tapes of Anouk communing with, and she's like, you know, these bugs, like, you know, they follow orders, they don't question, they're willing to die for the cause. No wonder they're winning. You know, that maybe this religion isn't actually a good idea to use. And then by the end, it's like, you know, it's official. You know, God exists. He's a citizen, and he wants us to win.
Yeah.
And just starts trying to, you know, when standard propaganda doesn't work, you know, make people believe in like a religious cause. I mean, it was kind of a very weird, like,
almost,
you know,
cultish.
Yeah, but it was like, I don't know. This, the overall like story of the movie just kind of, it's kind of a weird concept to to go with.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely unique. But you know, talking about the freaking songs, like,
yes,
you know,
it's a good day to die.
It's a good day to die. It's, you know, God, what were some of the like? I just, that to me, I was like,
and the whole merchandising in this one too. That was the other weird new concept. You know, it's like, because they're always like, oh, do your help for the war effort, because you know Sky Marshal Anouk has a CD, he has bottle openers, he has all this merchandise. You know, every dollar goes directly to the war effort. And even after he died, they didn't tell the world he was a traitor. They faked his death in a terrorist attack and told everyone he died as a hero. And they're like, buy the special memorial edition mixtape, you know. And it's like, would you like to buy more? And it's always like, would you like to know more? And then it's like, would you like to buy more? And it's like, you know, like kind of a whole, you know, talk on commercialization. Yes. And stuff. It was, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was very, very interesting.
But I've not had a chance to watch them. I went through about 30 minutes of them. But they also, you know, inspired two animated movies recently. We had one in 2012, Invasion, and one released just this year, Traitors of Mars, which actually had Casper Van Dien back, you know, voicing Rico. But the thing about these two movies, they're, from what I've seen of them, much closer to the original Starship Troopers. You know, they bring back Carmen, they bring back Carl, they bring back Rico. So it's finally a sequel featuring the characters that we know. Because even this third one, Rico's back, but I wouldn't call him like the star of the movie. It mainly follows, you know, the captain and the Sky Marshal and stuff, where he pretty much is like, he's there at the beginning of the movie. He's there for the rescue at the end, and then
and
there's
this
all this
actually,
stuff that happens in between.
You know, it actually spawned a a PC game too for Starship Troopers that was basically set, you know, a few years after the second film. So, you know, if you want to kill some bugs, you know, there's that option. I'm sure it's probably free to play now.
Oh. So do you have a favorite moment of these three films?
Yeah, any moment there was boobs. Because that was the one thing that all three franchises had in common, was boobs.
Yep.
And, you know, at that time in life, boobs were hard to come by. Had to take them where you could get them.
It was pre-internet days.
Yep.
There was no free internet porn back then. Oh, but yeah, I love Michael Ironside's character from the original. He's like probably my him and Sergeant Zim are probably my two favorite characters, other than, you know, the main cast from the movie. And I said it's one.
I don't know. I liked Ace, you know, as a musician, and him with his violin skills and whatnot. I mean, you know, you always need the bard.
Yep. The bard. Wow, I didn't even thought about that.
and probably Dax was another character, you know. Kind of the, I didn't necessarily do things by the books, but I did what had to be done at the time of need, and you know.
Oh yeah, and there's that whole thing too, because like, so they kind of think he's crazy, and it's when he, because he's, you know, supposedly killed his officer and stuff, played by Richard Berge, who's been in a bunch of stuff. You know, he's talking about how, like, he has trained all these guys and send them just straight to the meat grinder, and the government really doesn't care about the soldiers. We're just here to get killed. And that's the thing that's kind of, they kind of said there, like in the first movie, they're like, you know, fleet does the flying while the infantry does the dying. And, but like at the end of the movie, when, Sahara has gone back to civilian life, she has her kid, she happened, and he's like all like, you know, they've made a propaganda video starring him, making him out to be this hero of the Federation, which he would have probably hated because he hated the fact that he was, you know, recruiting kids to get killed. You know, and she kind of stops by this recruiting office and is watching the video, and the sergeant comes out and is like, oh, you know, nice baby. He's like, you should hurry up and grow up, Spud. We need more meat for the meat grinder. And she's like, oh, and it's like, oh.
Yeah. I guess one redeeming quality of the second film was, you know, there at the end, you know, when he, you know, puts the rescue ship finally shows up, and, you know, he's like, this girl has all of the information, make sure that nothing happens to her, and she gets to the, you know, highest chain of command, and, you know, they're like, well, what about you? And it's like, murderers, you know, don't get to go back home.
And he gets his hero's death in battle, where he's like, dual-wielding laser rifles is the horde of bugs overtake the base. Yeah, that was like a badass way to go out.
Yes.
So any final thoughts on this here cigar?
Man, this cigar has just been awesome. You know, like I said at the beginning, I kind of picked this up jokingly, you know, in a way. But, you know, because I don't know any other cigar that sports this much variety of Habano in one stick.
Yeah.
And, you know,
bro, you like Habano? We put Habano in your Habano.
So, you know, it has maintained its complexity. This has been a just a phenomenal smoke. I mean, this has been a great, you know, cigar that has just, you know, kept me on my toes. I mean, it's very much full flavor, full body, but, you know,
yeah, it's
there's
very
a complexity in it. It's, I figured, you know, all
and
right.
Flavor to it. It hasn't really burned me out with the strength. I mean, the flavor has maintained throughout.
Like, I'm really thinking about picking up some more of these cigars and, you know, figuring out some, you know, different drink, you know, combinations to pair with this thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't smoke too many Romeo and Julietas, but I think I might be doing myself a disservice.
Yeah, and like I said, I plan on watching these two animated movies when I have time. They're very anime-esque, so if you're a fan of anime and you're a fan of Starship Troopers, I'd say give them a watch, because like I said, I made it about halfway through one of them, and it looked pretty good, so
anything will be better than the second film.
Yes. So watch the first third in the anime.
Yeah.
You're good. And apparently there was even a TV show, like a single season of an animated TV show.
Yeah, apparently
that I never
it
saw.
Went the, you know, they stopped it after one season after a big cliffhanger, so there was really no closure. Something like another little sci-fi series, maybe called Firefly? I don't know.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to stomp some bugs and be right back. That was one thing, the bugs, too. The goo, when they blew up and people get splattered with bug. I mean, yeah.
It's slimy, Ray.
Yes. Very much like, oh yeah, these are definitely some kind of insect creatures. Oh, yeah, that part was just kind of disgusting. I'm like, oh, I do not want to be sprayed with bug juice. That just looks disgusting.
What do you think it is? Some combination of, like, gelatin and,
oh, I don't know. Yeah, it was like, I don't know, some kind of, like, gelatin and like paintball filling looking stuff. And each bug had a different color. Like the soldiers were like, you know,
that's probably
green,
where most of the budget
and
went.
The tanks
was,
were like,
you know,
orange. We need a couple gallons of Jello and some paint. Ugh. All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Duty, honor. We call upon our troopers in this our darkest hour. Our way of life is what we're fighting for. The flag that flies above us inspires us each day to give our very best in every way. It's a good day to die when you know the reasons why. Citizens, we fight for what is right. A noble sacrifice. When duty calls, you pay the price. For the Federation, I will give my life. Well, all is fair in love and war. That's what my gunny says. You're not alive unless you're almost dying. These are the words I march by. Duty, courage, honor.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
This week we are drinking Wild Heaven, Height of Civilization. And this is going to be a unique beer because we have talked a lot about beers aged in bourbon barrels, rum, cask, that type of thing. This time, beer is in Dos Vida tequila barrels. So, you know.
Well, doesn't tequila make you stronger?
I guess so. I mean, and you know, I mean, most of the time you think tequila, you think about the little worm in tequila, so it tied into the whole bug thing. Plus, I mean, if you join the Federation, you will be at the height of civilization.
Alrighty.
Yep, there you go. There's the philosophy behind the beer choice there.
A bit of stretch, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Whatever.
Yeah, this thing's a 12% ABV, so it is a English-style barley wine ale. So, you know, we've had some strong stouts, but yeah, a barley wine is very different. I mean, it's a beer that's very high in alcohol content, but also it's more fruity like a wine.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of interesting, you know. I mean, this is brewed with, you know, dried Prussian lemons, hibiscus, tart cherries, and cranberries, and even coca nibs, so you know, a whole lot of different flavors, you know, going into this barley wine. Not to mention, you know, the tequila barrels again.
Which, so, with the bourbon ales, bourbon ales, I really taste the bourbon. I'm not tasting that much tequila.
No, I mean, I will say that I'm getting a slight warmth. Now, that may just be because this is a 12% ABV. The thing for me is all the fruits. I mean, yeah. Definitely the tartness of the cherries and cranberries are coming through. You know, the citrusy aspect of the, you know, lemon and hibiscus. So, I mean, there's a lot going on with this beer. In fact, I'm still not quite sure how I feel about it. I mean,
yeah, I'm like, it's super tarty and.
And it definitely finishes with the coca, too. Like, yeah.
But like now that I've had like a couple sips, I am starting to pick up a little bit of that tequila on the back end, like toward the end of it. It definitely has that little bit of a tequila burn toward the very end.
So, I mean, this is, you know, definitely on the unique scale. I'm almost thinking this is a, you know, maybe a winter style beer is, you know, maybe for the colder months. You know, it's weird. We're
it's fall, still 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
It's
like, welcome to Georgia.
Atlanta doesn't have a fall. It's like goes from summer to winter.
Well, I mean, we had like a week of fall right before the hurricane.
Yeah. 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 Like I said, yeah. Dragon Con week was kind of the only fall weather got, you know, the leaves did turn yellow, but yeah, it's still, I think it was like 85 today. So.
Yeah.
Not very fall-like yet.
Very interesting aroma, though. I mean, it's almost like, you know, almost smelling like a box of, like, the, you know...
Box wine?
No, like chocolate-covered cherries or something. Like,
yeah.
You know, or like the chocolates that you get that have, like, the cherry filling and stuff like that, you know, for the holidays and things. You know, it's not bad. I'm just thinking that it's a beer for the acquired taste. Yeah. And, you know, this isn't something that you can really describe and say, hey, you're going to like this. I think you're going to drink it and either love it or you're going to be like, I mean.
I think this would be a beer for the wine drinker. It very much reminds me of a wine with all the, like, the fruity notes and stuff in it. So someone who...
barley wine.
Yeah. But someone who doesn't particularly like beer flavor, you know, is more of a wine drinker. This may be a beer that, you know, would kind of hit them on their scale.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a very heavy lacing on the glass, very frothy, you know, creamy head, and...
Yeah, definitely more complex than the emergency drinking beer we had a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, in an emergency, this is probably not the beer you want to reach for, because you probably will not function very well. you know, so for me, I think I'm at maybe a 3.5 for me, just because there's so many flavors that
it's hard to pick out. Like,
it needs more beer, and I feel like I'm drinking everything but beer. You know, outside of the head and the coloring, that's about the only resemblance of beer that I've got.
Like, yeah, it's very chocolate cherry.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's... There's almost too much happening.
Yeah, it's good. It's almost overly complex. It's... You know, if you're a beer connoisseur and want to try a little of everything, this is definitely something different.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with that, we will be right back.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the podcast. Here we are. We have another interview from Dragon Con with Jay Little, game Hello. Designer. You know, what is your current official job title? What all is in your wheelhouse there?
My business card says professional geek. So I consider myself a full-time game designer because I'm still working with a number of different companies to publish my own games as well as work on theirs. Plus, I teach game design and board game production at UW Stout in Menominee, Wisconsin. So I keep myself pretty busy.
So, I mean, that was one of the things that was interesting because I have known people that have wanted to learn. I didn't know that was something that you could actually go to college and study and then, you know, get a degree in game making.
And most of it right now is still tied around video game design because that's what is in the forefront and makes a lot of money and people are aware of. And there are dozens of universities across the country that have a video game program.
You hear those on radio all the time.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of those early on, you just need to understand good fundamentals of game design. If you don't understand what makes a good game, it doesn't matter if it's a video game or a board game or a card game, it's going to suck. So you need to understand the basics of game design. And I'm fortunate where I teach, I'm given a little bit more sway and control over certain things that I have experience over. So I told them, you don't have a class that just teaches how games get made. So I proposed a course called Board Game Production and Processes. It's a really intense 3-week course where we meet from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for 3 weeks. And we treat it like a studio and we crank a game out. They talk to a bunch of experts in the field. And they get to feel what it's like working in a tense, crazy, sometimes a little bit scary environment like that. So it isn't available everywhere. There are some universities that have access to people who've been in the field or have some professional experience. And those universities, I think, are able to offer something really unique to their students.
What one thing that I kind of want to know is when you're making a game, like, what's the first step? Do you come up with the mechanics of it and then decide, oh, this is going to be... this game, or do you come up with the story first and then make the mechanics to fit what your end product needs to be?
So for game design, the chicken or the egg is always, is it theme or is it mechanic? And it really depends, and it seems like such a knee-jerk or evasive answer to say, oh, it depends, everything is different, depends on the project, but it really, really does. because sometimes you will be approached by a publisher who says, we want game X. So doesn't really matter what you had in mind. You have to deliver game X. So they might have a theme, but no idea how to fulfill it, or they might have some mechanics and they want you to come up with some sort of theme. When I was working with Star Wars, it was pretty obvious what came first, right? Yeah. It was theme. Now figure out something that really feels and resonates for Star Wars.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think that's why I blogged the X-Wings miniature series so much is, I mean, you're playing in that universe, but the mechanics and, you know, the stories and campaigns and everything just bring it full circle. And
that, and it was a great, like, intro to miniatures gaming, because, you know, you get the people in the Warhammer that's, like, super expensive, and then you have to build everything. With the X-Wing, you need maybe four or five ships for a basic game, and they're already painted and assembled, so you can go playing right out of the box.
So, you know, early on in development, when we were trying to decide exactly what sort of product this was going to be, of course, a lot of attention was focused on that base product, that one X-Wing and two TIE Fighters. And it's interesting to see the two big splits or the two big audiences for this game. The people who haven't really played miniatures before, aren't familiar with it, they look at it and go, how can you charge this much for only three ships? Meanwhile, people have been playing Warhammer 40K or other things. They're like, oh my goodness, you only have to charge the, right? And so then you know that you're at a good middle zone when it's like that. But I think as more and more people, and now obviously it's been around for so long, they realize that whenever you're purchasing something for X-Wing, you're not just purchasing a ship. You're purchasing all this content that now interacts with and potentially plays around with every other thing you've ever bought for X-Wing. So there's a lot of diversity every time you buy a new product.
Yeah, and it's even from the collector's standpoint, because I, you know, with the way the mechanics are set up, with a 100-point thing, you don't need that many ships, but I have to buy all the ships because I want them all just they look so good. And, like, the mechanics of that game, too, seemed very revolutionary at the time, because, you know, most of your miniature games is, like, you make your turn, I make my turn, but with X-Wing, you're having to predetermine your turns and kind of move simultaneously without having the input of watching what he does and then choose. So it's almost like a chess, or it feels like a dogfight, because you're having to make decisions based on kind of intuition and patterns.
So it was kind of like wrangling cats or organized chaos, where I didn't want it to be perfectly predictable, because then it can be solved. And if it can be solved, then somebody who has played before will always have an advantage over someone who hasn't. Now, granted, experience is great, but there's just enough luck, just enough uncertainty, that when you sit down and play someone you've never played before, whether you're a veteran or a novice, you don't know how they're going to play. Are they going to be aggressive? Are they going to be conservative? Oh my goodness, they banked left when I thought they were going to go forward, and you have to adapt to the circumstances. So I wanted to include some things where people didn't have to just look at and manage their own decisions and their own position on the board, but really consider, all right, based on my opponent and where they are, what are they going to do? Can I outwit them? And I really think that that helps recreate some of that tension that you would assume would happen during a dogfight, where you're making split-second decisions and reacting to everything that's going on around you. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, don't blow up. Oh, he's in my sights. Pew, 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 pew,
pew. And then the dice roll.
Right, then it all goes out the window when you roll blanks.
Yeah, or you didn't measure your turn, probably like, oh, I just hit that asteroid. I didn't expect it.
But those are great moments, too. Those are great moments.
You said that you know, it's kind of a back and forth between theme and mechanics.
Yep.
As a designer, like, what's your favorite part to work on? Is it the nerdy that wants to figure out the math behind it, or is it like, I want to make a insert genre game here?
I'm fortunate enough that I've worked with enough publishers and I've done enough games that I can kind of pick and choose what I want to do. To an extent, right? I'm not making a living off this, which is why I'm also teaching. But I did, a while ago, I designed a game called 3 Years of War, which is about the worst 3 years out of the 100 Years War. It doesn't matter which three, it's just the worst three. And I approached it because I had never done a game, I've never did a war game before. And I decided to set out and do my spin on a war game. Otherwise, I love push-your-luck mechanics, and I love dice where you roll, re-roll, kind of like zombie dice or a lot of those push-your-luck games. And so I designed a different game, Zero Hour, where the intent was specifically, I am going to include this mechanic in one way or another. So I have to find a way to include this mechanic that I love in a way that gamers haven't experienced it yet. Otherwise, why check out my game versus a whole bunch of other dice push-your-luck games? So it kind of depends. I really enjoy doing both. I think the greater challenge is having a theme handed to you and then being asked to design something that best fulfills someone else's vision of a theme. That's really tricky.
It's probably a lot better, you know, when you're designing your own thing versus like, you know, some cookie, we want this. And
right.
So, you know, you teach game design. How did you get originally into game design? Like, how did you find this?
It came in basically two waves. First, I've always been a gamer like most people, and like many gamers today or my generation, I started out with Dungeons & Dragons, which introduced me to role-playing, which made lifelong friends. And I actually got my first money in role-playing while I was still in college. This now-defunct company paid me for some art and some rules that I had made for one of their games. And that was awesome. Yes. And I thought I could do this forever. And then I went through the rest of college and graduated and realized that life didn't quite work that way. So I worked in the, quote, real world for a while. But then 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons came out. And it had this really interesting premise called the open game license, which essentially meant anyone, and literally anyone, could produce, quote, official source material, modules, expansions, supplements, for 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons, as long as they included this certain amount of legalese. So a lot of really cool publishers popped up, and some not so good ones. But I was fortunate enough to hook up with some really great publishers, especially I'll give a shout out to Goodman Games, who are still going strong. And Joseph Goodman really gave me my next chance back into the game design arena. So that kind of led into another job, which got me into WizKids. WizKids opened me up to more freelance opportunities. Fast forward, I get to work at Fantasy Flight Games, and I'm pulled in to work on some Games Workshop things. And then, as everybody knows, the Star Wars license came along, and I got to work on X-Wing miniatures as well as design the Star Wars roleplay game.
So do you have any advice for, you know, the younger generation who is wanting to get into game design, you know, other than, you know, graduating high school and coming to your college? Yeah, is there something like, you know, the first steps they need to concentrate on?
I think when most people come to me and they say, can you help me design a game, or I want to be a game designer, what do I do? I ask them to think about it a little bit more and tell me what you really mean, right? And I think that there are usually three goals that people have in mind, and they need to figure out which one of those goals they have. And the first goal is they want their idea to become a thing, an actual real thing like Pinocchio, a living boy.
Yeah.
The second one is they want to produce something that actually gets to the marketplace, which is different. You know, they're not just sharing with the friends and family, but they want it to be out there where other people can enjoy and interact with the game. And then the third one is they want to make money off of it. And I tell them, ignore number three, because I'm still trying to figure that one out. All right. But aim for number one first. There's nothing right now to stop you from making a game. With Kickstarter and Indiegogo, GoFundMe, and all of these other crowdfunding sources, there are resources out there. If you present a cool game idea, there is an audience out there that will help you support it if you've made smart decisions and presented it in a solid way. But then also, there are so many resources for you to be able to actually publish your own games. I personally use thegamecrafter.com. They are a small print run and print-on-demand service, but whenever I have a prototype that I want to show to a publisher, I submit everything to them, and they print out a professional-grade quality game that I can go take and show to other people. So I don't need any special access. I don't need some secret handshake to be able to use those sorts of services. They're out there, and anybody who's willing to take the time, and it takes some time to do research and to ask questions, but there's nothing to stop you from making your own game. So the first piece of advice would be, don't stop yourself, right? Take the time to ask some questions, to Google some things, and just give it a shot. The worst that can happen is your first game goes down in flames and dies a horrible, miserable death. Okay, that sounds bad, but you can learn from that,
yes.
Right? And then you apply what you learn to the next game and the next game. And I'll tell you what, if you've taken the time and invested the resources to make a physical game, welcome to game design. You are officially a game designer. You've already done more than what 90% of everybody has dreamt about in their head, but never took that step to make real.
Yeah, because I mean, because I've seen a lot of stuff come out of Kickstarter that both looks super professional, and then just, you know, like I said, I saw a game one day, and the board was basically a laminated thing that you could kind of roll up like a poster, but the mechanics of it were fun, so it doesn't,
right.
You know, it doesn't have to look like something straight out of a Milton Bradley box. It can be, you know, as long as it's fun, it's fun.
Oh, absolutely.
And this one was the weirdest too, because it was, I can't remember the name of it, but basically it was the game of life in River's Earth. You started off with a family and a job, and then you got hooked on drugs, and the goal of the game was to be the first person living in the gutter at the end of the game. So yeah. It's like the game of life in reverse.
Yeah, but if you have a solid game, I mean, look, chess. Very, very simple game, really simple pieces. You can play it with ornate ivory-carved pieces, but you can also just play it with pieces of cardboard, and it's still a solid game.
Yes.
Right? And so if you have a good game, it doesn't matter what kind of components. Go ahead and pilfer other games that you have. Go thrifting and go to Goodwill and grab some games, or go to a craft store and pick up glass beads and other things like that, and just make it, right?
And, you know, as a designer... the choppers are coming in. like I said, once you develop like a mechanic, do you are like, all right, I can tweak this and use this for various games, or do you like to try to kind of come up with something new each time you try to put something out?
I think it's kind of arrogant to think that I could come up with something really new and novel, because you're never competing against fewer games. There are only more and more games entering the marketplace and entering this hobby. So it's hard to come up with something truly new. Like the legacy mechanic is probably one of the more recent, truly new and original developments. Before that, deck building was a big one, right? But there are only so many times that something like that comes along. And I don't think I'll be able to hit one of those. But since flattery, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I like to flatter a lot of other designers and learn from them and what they've done and see, instead of just copying them, can I find something that Eric Lang did that I thought was cool and something that Kevin Wilson did that I thought was cool, or maybe something from a particular game that I liked, and take those different elements and see if there's a way that I can take these 3, 4, 5 ideas and get them to mesh together. So I guess the long roundabout answer, which this has now become, is instead of one new thing, what I try to do is take several things that may be established and people are familiar with and see if I can combine them in a new way.
All right, and final question, and we'll release you back into the con world. as you said, you were a gamer first. Do you have a particular? Because I'm not going to ask you what your favorite game that you've made is. Because that's like, yeah, what's it? That's like trying to choose between my children.
Blood Bowl Team Manager.
But other than your games, do you have a favorite game growing up that was like your?
Yes, absolutely. Cosmic Encounter. It was my favorite game when I had the old Mayfair edition. I didn't start with Eon edition. And it's still my favorite game. I was fortunate enough to work on an expansion for that and work with Peter Alatka and Bill Abarrell, two of the three original designers. It's a game I've been playing for literally decades. I still love it. It's still amazing. It's still awesome. And if people haven't played it before, shame on you. Go play Cosmic Encounter.
Check it out, and we'll be right back. And thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history. DuckTales.
Woo. Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered your wigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
And now, it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So, I'm just going to go ahead and open this up because we got a badass trailer for something that I've been really, really looking forward to and super pumped about. So, we've got Marvel's The Punisher.
Oh,
and,
yes.
You know, I think they put Metallica back on the map.
Yes. I mean, I didn't know if this was a trailer or just a badass, like, Metallica video. Because, yeah, it's all set to the Metallica Classic 1.
Yep. And I mean, I love the opening with John Barenthal, you know, just sitting there, you know, doing that little intro on the
acoustic teaching
guitar.
His kid to play guitar. There's like flashbacks of before his family was killed. And then they even have all the gunshots like cued to, and the gunshots and the chambering of the weapons to like the drum beats of the song.
Epic chugs.
Oh yeah, and even that one part where it's like just where like the beat is really, him like just screaming and like firing a freaking belt-fed machine gun. It's like and I'm like yes.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, the more I see, the more excited I get. You know, yeah. Originally I was a little bit skeptical. I mean, you know, I'm a big Thomas Jane Punisher fan. But I mean, Barenthal, I think, has really, you know, pulled a rabbit out of a hat trick on this one, and it just looks super badass.
Like I said, he was my favorite part of Daredevil Season 2. They should have just called it Punisher Season 1. And especially, like, if you... Spoiler for the end of Season 2, where he just shows up on a roof with a sniper rifle and saves Daredevil's ass. And you finally see him just standing on a rooftop with a rifle and the freaking Punisher shirt, you're just like, fuck yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, the shirt is so iconic.
There's a shirt and a trench coat and a sniper rifle, you're like, finally. Because that's the way the Marvel TV show does it, where they're like, nobody has their costumes until like the very end of the intro season, or they don't have any costumes at all, like the other Marvel characters. But yeah, when you see Punisher in that iconic, you know, logo, it's just like, fuck yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, I'm super stoked, and you know, there's even been rumors that the release date may have been leaked. I still don't know how credible that is, but, you know, some are saying mid-October-ish, which kind of, you know, like we were discussing, falls in that.
Yeah, if you go with the pattern of the earlier, you know, releases, the fall series usually comes out either October or early November, so it fits for that window, because, you know, in the trailer it just says 2017, and the rest of the date's all scrambled. But yeah, it's plausible that we're getting like an October 13th release.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, more to come on that as we know more. Up next, you know, a film that, you know, originally we got a poster debut, which has drawn a lot of attention, and I don't necessarily think it was the intention that the producers were looking for. So originally we got a poster release for the upcoming Tomb Raider film. Well, you know, we're not quite sure if it was a bad, you know, Photoshop job or what, but if you look at Lara Croft's neck, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of Photoshops on, you know, it looking very dinosaurish because it is very elongated for some reason. Just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the intent was there, but, I mean, I guess there's no publicity that's bad publicity when you're developing a film. So, but I gotta say, you know, the traditional look of Lara Croft necessarily isn't there, but, I mean, the film itself, you know, and as far as the trailer, feels like Tomb Raider.
I mean, yeah, especially some of the Indiana Jones-style, like, action sequences going through the tombs or whatever, looks very much like the game. And this is obviously going to be kind of an origin story, so it's going to be closer to the last Tomb Raider game that came out. I mean, she even kind of looks, you know, in the tank top and homemade bow and arrow, looks very much like the Lara Croft from that game. But I did like, there's a one sequence in the trailer where it shows her going into some kind of gun store to buy guns, and she's like, pulls out the HK compensated that you're so used to seeing her use, and be like,
yes.
I need two of these. You're like, fuck yes. Like, I'm on point.
Yep, like, absolutely.
Like by the end of the movie, we should get full-on like dual-wielding Lara Croft.
You know, that'll absolutely have to be a thing. I mean, it's just so iconic that, I mean, it just can't not be done. So, you know, March 16th, 2018 is the release date that we're looking at for the Tomb Raider film. And as more trailers are made available, we will keep you folks apprised. Switching gears, you know, we talked a lot about space and, you know, galactic battles taking place during the main segment. But It looks like J.J. Abrams is back and will be directing Star Wars Episode 9. Lens flare for everyone.
I mean, his first one was pretty much a recreation of A New Hope, so is this going to be his version of Return of the Jedi? Oh.
Yeah, and it looks like, too, that the release date, you know, has changed from May 24th of 2019 to December 20th of 2019. So, you know, kind of sticking with that, you know, late, right before the holiday, you know, Star Wars release that they tend to do.
It's like, Merry Christmas, motherfuckers. Here's Star Wars. And I've heard the other, like, recent rumor that they're saying that they, in the next standalone film is the Han Solo film. They're starting to say that they're going to show the Kessel Run, the famous Kessel Run, maybe part of the new Han Solo origin film.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, you know, good to see JJ back in the ring. I mean, it's Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, The Force Awakens. Like originally, like I absolutely loved it, but once the nostalgia wore off and I saw it again, there was some plot holes and problems to me. But still, it looked like Star Wars. I mean, it mostly covered characters I gave no fucks about. You know, I wanted to see what happened to my original guys, and then you killed off one of them. But and your Darth Vader fill in was kind of a bitch, but it looked good.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll give JJ a script that will, you know, stand up to his visuals. So I don't know how well the story will be, but at least it'll look good.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. You know, we're going to get episode 8 on December 15th. You know, wait the following year. And, you know, as we get trailers and everything else for episode 9, then once again, keep you folks in the know. Another film that, you know, we've got a new trailer for is Jumanji. And the more I see of this film, the more I really want to see it.
Oh, yeah, when it first announced, I'm like, Jumanji, really? We're rebooting it with now the storyline. Instead of the classic board game, it's playing off video game tropes. And I'm like, but it looks hilarious.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, you know, you got the front man, The Rock. I mean, but, you know, Kevin Hart, Karen Gillan, like, they can't make a bad movie out of it. And, I mean, it looks funny. It looks entertaining. You know, I kind of like the idea of it bringing, you know, into more modern. I mean, I think people relate more to video games than, you know, us nerds that sit around and, you know, play board games for hours. But, I mean,
plus, especially the old, like, stereotype of, like, the video game multiplayer, like, characters and stuff where you have the warrior, the tech guy.
Everybody's got their strengths and their weaknesses. Yeah. And it's like, I love cake. Cake is my weakness.
And with them playing the avatars of like the actual players, it's kind of interesting from an acting standpoint because, you know, the kids, basically the game that the characters end up being a game is pretty much their polar opposites, where the nerd kid is now The Rock, the shy girl is now like super hot, badass Karen Gillan, the jock is now like the guy who carries stuff and is kind of like slow and small, and then the hot, you know, chick is now Jack Black. So it's kind of going to be weird seeing them portray the personalities that they've been endued with.
But I mean, I think it's quirky and it's going to work. And you know what? I got to say, I'm excited to see Jack Black, you know, making some film appearances as well. I
yes.
mean, you know, if anybody can pull off a, you know, hot chick, it'll be Jack Black.
Yes. Oh, the comedy will ensue.
I wonder if he'll have a pick of destiny. And, you know, in other news, going back to speaking of superheroes, Patty Jenkins is confirmed to direct Wonder Woman sequel. So, you know, I really like the first Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, hopefully they've turned around the DC universe because, yeah, up until this point, it's just been, every time something comes out, I'm like, I'm not giving them any more money. But then I still give them warning money just so I can make fun of them on the podcast if it sucks.
But I mean,
and
I got
I was not disappointed with Wonder Woman.
No,
it was very good.
You know, and I got to say, too, you know, to your point, I was, you know, went and saw it the other day. I know I'm a couple of weeks behind, but, you know, the trailer that they showed for Justice League, I'm like, this looks like a badass movie. But then again, I think back to, you know, we'll probably catch a little bit of hate. I don't know, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, Batman versus Superman, it looked cool on the trailer. And then I saw the movie
and realized it had no plot.
Yes. So
even Suicide Squad looked badass. I mean, it was pretty good, but it wasn't as badass as I thought it was going to be. But yeah, I mean, maybe they finally, you know, now that they've got some new guys running, you know, now that the TV guys are kind of in there, that it, maybe there's this turnaround. Yeah, like there might be hope. I will at least see it, because I can't make fun of it if I've not seen it.
You can. So, I'll just, you know, I'll make fun of you for that.
Yeah, so I mean, I will probably see it, but yeah, it's like I said, it's if they disappoint me again, I'm like, nope, I'm keeping my money from now on. I
will until the like next this. Movie.
Like this, like I will boot like this from now on, because I'm not giving you bad behavior should not be rewarded if we get burnt again.
Well, speaking of burning, and you know, it isn't a Cigar Nerd podcast without us talking about the impending doom of, you know, the robot overlords. But, you know, with no further ado, Laura Hamilton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, return in Terminator, like 3000 or something. Set in a future not too far from probably the last movie.
Yeah, but, you know, supposedly James Cameron is actually, you know, going to be involved with this one. He's not, you know, directing the film, but, you know, he is working on the script alongside with David Goyer. So, you know, maybe it will be a little bit better than some of the previous sequels we've gotten.
I mean, you know what? Bringing back the original cast, I almost wonder if, you know, maybe it isn't a way to add some closure and then maybe hand off some of the more iconic roles to some new folks.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, I did see Genesis, and I'm just wondering how this is going to fit into the storyline. Because, you know, like they, because you know, in one timeline of Terminator, she died. And then in this new version, they've kind of did like, not really a reboot, but a soft reboot where, like, the Genesis kind of went back to the sequences of the first movie. And so the timeline from here, if it's still set in that Genesis universe, has been tweaked and, you know, stuff could could change
and,
from there.
You know, the other thing is, you know, maybe this is a standalone film that has nothing to do with the trilogy.
Yeah, it could be weird, you know, reboot where they're in it playing different characters. You know, who knows? It's...
Yeah.
You know, or they're like, all right, you know, this is the sequel to Terminator 2, and the stuff that has come before, we're just going to ignore and kind of, you know, start fresh from this point in history without dealing with without Rise of the Machines or, you know, the future Terminator was. Just ignore the last three films, and we'll just start, like, this is the sequel to Terminator 2. I mean,
yeah,
who knows?
So, I mean...
There's, you know, other than that announcement that those two are back in, you know, we don't really have anything on, like, the actual story of it yet.
All right, so, you know, switching gears again. Here it is, October. It's my Christmas season. I love horror. I love all the haunted houses. All the things that comes with the month of October. So,
and Netherworld is already open.
Yes. But Jamie Lee Curtis is actually returning for a new Halloween film set to release October of 2018. So, you know, it'll be cool to see Laurie Strode make an appearance again. So,
yeah, that's going to be another one, too, because I've seen all the Halloween movies. Pretty sure she died in the original timeline, probably a couple times. So, yeah, I don't know if this is going to be continuing off the Rob Zombie storyline or what, but yeah, this is, but, and also it's, you know, Danny McBride is involved in it. So, it's, like I said, it's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so, I mean, they've got Green, you know, directing, you know, John Carpenter is still very much in.
Yeah, he's executive producing.
So, I mean, I'm not quite sure, you know, I mean, the little trailer that we got was, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis basically tweeting out, you know, same clothes, same porch, same issues, just 40 years later. So, I mean.
Yeah, this may be one of them where they're like, ignore the previous, I don't even know, 9 films at this point. And this is the unofficial sequel to, like, the first movie or the second movie.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's like, because.
I mean, we've already had, like, the resurrection of Michael Myers, so, I mean.
I mean, she has returned in previous films, but, yeah, I'm pretty sure they killed her off in one of them.
Or maybe, I don't know. You know, that's the beauty of Nerd News, is you don't have to have all the answers. We just report on what's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, so we will see.
Post your theories. We will rip them off.
But Danny McBride, as a writer, has made some good movies. So, I mean, I loved what Rob Zombie did with the character with his two reboots of the franchise. Yeah, they were actually very good. So, you know,
I'd like to see Rob Zombie direct some more stuff. I've always been a big fan of, you know, Rob Zombie films. So, you know, as well as the music.
I want to see Rob Zombie do, like, you know, he's done great with all his weird horror shit, you know, his original stuff and with Halloween. I'd like to see him do something, like, not in his wheelhouse to see, like, a Rob Zombie, like, straight-up action film or a Rob Zombie comedy.
Rob Zombie does romance comedy.
Oh, it'd just be so weird, like, just a straight-up, because, you know, the interviews
starring
I've seen with him.
Firefly family.
Yeah, I mean, the interviews I've seen with him, he's kind of, you know, he definitely has a nerdy streak. He's really funny when you see him talking about, like, yeah, like Rob Zombie doing like a straight up like R-rated comedy. I kind of want to see that.
I mean, I almost wonder if it would be like a scary movie. Like, I mean, maybe parody the horror stuff. I don't know. You know.
I mean, you see that that commercial he directed for like Downey or something, where it's like a killer cleaning his clothes.
Yes.
So, yeah. I mean,
it could very much happen. Any other news or, you know, any tidbits of information you got that's exciting?
No.
All right. Well, then close out this episode, my friend.
And with that, we will check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are found, or download them straight from our website. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at CigarNerdPod. Get your energy drinks at Cigar Nerd. StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds. Get your badass shirts at Real Men Smoke Cigars. And with that, do apes want to live forever? And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.